This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz. This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Welcome to the Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Barry and Mariana. The big tournament this weekend, Barry, is at the Tauranga Bridge Club, Waikato Bay Plenty Anniversary Weekend.
That's if you don't count that Canberra is on at the moment. There's quite a few Kiwis over there. The main event just started today. We're recording on Monday, guys. The Summer Festival of Bridge SWT Teams event underway. And some Kiwis doing pretty well in early stage. Leading is the Laser team, and that's got Andy Braithwaite, who's sort of a part-time Kiwi, isn't he?
Yep.
They're leading. The second is another part-time Kiwi, Ashley Bark, is in the second team. And the fourth team, James team, Jack James and Jeremy Fraser-Hoskin are in that. Yeah, Kiwis all over the place. Fifth team, the Lebowitz team. That one includes Malcolm Mayer and Brian Mace. We're only talking after three matches out of 12, so by next week, they might not be there.
And there is 100 teams in that event, so that's pretty cool.
In Canberra, the one-day Swiss pairs was won by Jesse Pellinato and Leon Mayer. They had a big win in the last match to win by about 9 VPs. Funnily enough, they were playing another Kiwi in Jenna Gibbons with Julian Foster. They were really close going into the last round, but Leon had a big win, and that got him the overall. And Jenna and Julian dropped to 10th. They probably won't thank me for mentioning that.
As we mentioned, Tauranga Anniversary, that has got 18 pairs in the restricted open. That's quite a good number for that event.
9 tables there and 12 tables in the open pairs. Look like people want to play teams, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Twice as many entries in the teams as there were in the pairs. 24 teams as opposed to 12 tables in the pairs. We better be talking about this weekend just gone. So the main event was the 10A Swiss pairs in Invercargill, taken out by Anne Somerville and Murat Genk. And that was just enough for Anne Somerville to make it to Gold Grandmaster. Well done to Anne.
Congratulations, Anne. And she's part of your team going to India.
She is.
How cool is that?
Second were Paul Freeland and Margaret Purley, who I haven't seen much of lately, so maybe they're going to make a big comeback this year. They did well to wind up second. The Warkworth Restricted Pairs attracted a big field, 16 tables.
That's good.
Won by Mark and Gabrielle Bursich from Sam McNay and Chris Wilson in second. I wonder how our correspondent went. We're talking about Ross Longney. Oh, he finished up in eighth. Respectable, not disgraced. I played at Waitemata in the 5A tournament there.
Was it a good tournament?
It was quite a strong field, only a small field, only 11 tables. And it was won by George Sun and Jenna Liu.
Ah, okay.
Two big scores and won by about 10%. Easy win for George and Jenna.
We've got some topics that we want to talk about today. We started talking about bridge crimes. And one of the crimes that was mentioned was counting your tricks after playing trick one. Now, your tip was to have a look before you play at trick one.
That's right.
So here's another crime. Fingers crossed you should avoid. Underleading an ace against a suit contract. Why is that number one in the crimes list, Barry?
I can remember when I first started to play bridge. The little old lady that taught me how to play bridge would wander around the room. And if she saw anybody, including me, underleading an ace in a suit contract, she used to punch you in the arm. And I've still got the bruises. One thing I know is you don't underlead aces against suit contracts. They have a habit of losing to singleton kings or even queens. And your ace is gone forever. Don't underlead an ace in a suit contract. Lead something else.
Punch your arm. They breed them tough in that manner. Okay, number two. Rescuing partner from a penalty double. What's with that?
You know, partners don't like getting rescued sometimes.
Of course.
Sometimes you're just getting yourself into further trouble. Unless you've got a fairly decent hand, you know, I'm talking about sort of around 10 points and a decent suit of your own that you really want to bid, you know, usually you just leave partner there. And you're not necessarily bidding because you don't like partner's suit. You're bidding because you want to show some points and a good suit.
How do you know if it's a penalty double?
It doesn't really matter whether it's a takeout double or a penalty double. If it's a takeout double that they're going to convert into penalties, it doesn't matter either way. If you're in the pass out seat and they've just passed a takeout double and now it's your bid, somebody wants to penalize partner. I think there's an exception to this rule. I really
What is
do.
that?
And I think the exception is when they're trying to penalize your partner at the one level. I remember Roy Kerr always saying that when the opposition double you at the one level, they've got you.
Really?
If you're ever going to run, that's the time to run, is when they've doubled you at the one level. You're probably in big trouble already.
Oh,
I
okay.
guess he thinks you're playing with the bank's money by running to another suit and hoping to find somewhere better. I had an interesting hand on Saturday.
Right.
The bidding went four spades, pass, pass to me.
Oh, okay.
And the really interesting thing about my hand was my spade suit. I had five spades to the king, queen, jack.
Oh, my goodness.
I also had the King of Hearts and the King of Diamonds. And I would have liked to have doubled for penalties, but our agreement is that double is really still just a three-suited takeout. If partner's got nothing, has got nothing really to bid, that they could pass and take their chances in four spades doubled. But if they've got like a six-card suit or something, or a suit or something they think's worth bidding, they should take it out. I think
Right.
that's quite a good agreement. I'm sure there's lots of listeners that don't, but I mean, unless you're playing against a lunatic, and if the four spade opener is listening to this, I'm not necessarily saying he's a lunatic, but I'm not saying he isn't either. Anyway, you're not very often going to have five spades to the king, queen, jack, and being able to double for penalties. You'll much more often have quite good values and no clear suit to bid. So that's why we play it that way. So in the end, I thought, well, if I double, Jenny's probably going to bid. And I think she would have. She had six clubs and she probably would have bid
Bid
five
five
clubs if
clubs.
I'd have doubled.
So you
So I
passed.
passed and I let him go four light. You know what? It was still actually right for me to pass. Now, you might wonder how that could be. The hand on my right had eight diamonds to the ace, queen, jack. And if I doubled four spades, they could run to five diamonds, which is only one light. So even if I double it, which I don't think I am, I'm only getting 100, whereas in four spades, undoubled, I got 200. Good
Right.
business.
That's a
So
crazy hand, though.
it was a crazy hand. So the opening four spade bidder had a hand with six spades and five clubs, and he thought he'd open it at the four level. When the dummy went down, Mariana, there was a bit of a gasp. You know what
Uh-oh.
was in dummy?
Avoid.
A void in
No.
spades, but that wasn't what the gasp was about. It had ace queen to five hearts and ace queen jack to eight diamonds and no clubs and no spades, not a single black card in sight.
That brings back
So
memories from teams.
dummy threw this hand down on the table and said, "What am I meant to do with this?"
Not say that.
So, in a crazy sort of a way, it worked out well for me to pass.
Yeah. I'm still thinking about what you said. A double at the one level. I can't think how that transcends to a penalty double. That would be simply a takeout double that partner would be leaving in.
So,
Yep.
partner has converted that double to a penalty double. Now,
Got
the
it.
auction usually would go something like one heart, pass, pass, double. Pass, pass to you. And what Roy Kerr was suggesting when he said they've got you when they double you at the one level is this is the time to think about running. If it goes one heart and your partner's bid two diamonds and it goes pass, pass, double, pass, pass to you, well, I think you might as well just suck it up those times and play two diamonds, two hearts doubled or whatever partner bid. And maybe they'll make it. Maybe they've got their bid. Maybe it'll teach them a good lesson. Don't
Yeah.
overcall on a lot of crap again.
Let's talk about another one. A bridge crime you should avoid: playing too fast to trick the opponents.
I don't know whether I agree with that. I mean, I play really fast, but I'm not doing it to trick the opponents. I remember reading about a world-class player who played very quickly, because it's often said that you shouldn't play too quickly, you should think. And he said that he always played quickly. And he might have made the odd mistake, but you reckon on balance, he did better from the mistakes they made when he played fast. don't think there's any law against it. You can check with Judge Julie. I don't think there's any law about playing quickly.
Okay.
The thing is, of course, the opponents don't have to play quickly just because Declara does. They can stop and think. But somehow, when Declara plays really quickly, you just sort of get into the swing of it and everybody sort of plays at the same pace. Don't you think? It seems to work that way, doesn't it?
How did you get to be such a fast player?
Just came naturally to me. I always played fast.
Right, the light's on and you can see how things are going to pan out and you just play for it.
Still make a play in at trick one, but it doesn't usually take me all that long.
Right.
So I'm not saying it's right to do what I do, that's just how I play. It's not like I've got a train to catch or anything. I'm
Yeah.
usually one of the first ones finished.
Absolutely. I would agree with that. And just because we are doing this fast, we're going to hit on number four, ignoring the vulnerability. I would say maybe 50% of people, opponents, partners, maybe they don't take enough care in looking at the vulnerability. What do you
Well,
think?
yeah, vulnerability is important. I guess the two most extreme situations is A, when you're vulnerable and they're not. If you're vulnerable and they're not, and they open at the one level and you want a bit of suit at the two level, you need a good hand. I'd suggest you have at least an opening hand and you want a really good suit. It is risky overcalling at the two level when partner might not have anything and they haven't even guaranteed any cards in your suit. So you need a good hand to come in vulnerable against not.
Yep.
The other one, of course, is the other extreme, is when you're not vulnerable and they are. Okay, if you're feeling frisky, this is the time to go for it. This is definitely the time to go for it. There is a lot more room for error when you're not vul and they are. And you'll notice a lot of good players, particularly good young players, they are lunatics when they are not vul against vul. Some of them should be locked up for some of the things they get up to. They'll
Right.
open a week two on a five card suit or even a four card suit. They might not have any points. They'll make a weak jump with not much. They'll do anything when they're not vul against vul because they know that the vulnerability is in their favor.
Right.
Even if they get doubled and they go a few light, it's still not as much as the opponent's vulnerable game.
I agree. I think one of the most important things, talking about the vulnerability, is that you need to try and calculate what your score may end up if you are red versus green, if you're going to go in and do something like that, or even if you're going to
That's why
make
when you're vulnerable, that
sacrifice.
way when you're vulnerable against not, it's so bad. Even if they double you and only get you one light, that is 200, which is more that they will get from any part score they can make.
Yeah.
So 200 is often called the kiss of death in bridge. Going minus 200 is usually a bad score.
Minus 200.
You don't want to do that.
No.
And it only gets worse. If you go two light, it's 500. And if you go three light, it's 800. And if
Yeah.
you go more than three light, you need to stop counting.
Yep, I remember posting an 1100 at Thames. Ooh, I was just in for the ride, and
I
I was
saw a hand
thinking,
in the way to matter. Somebody went for 2,000 on Saturday.
2000.
They played six no trumps, doubled down eight.
Wow.
In fact, it was the
Okay.
same hand I was just talking about earlier where North had eight diamonds and five hearts. It was that one. They wound up in six no trumps, doubled down eight.
That was never going to work, was it?
No. Hey, if they'd have got out for down seven, it wasn't going to be much better.
FIAQNA, coming up next, we're off to the courthouse.
To know me is to love me. I must be a hell of a man. Oh Lord, it's hard to be humble, but I'm doing the best that
Good
I
morning,
can.
we have the bailiff with us today. Hello.
Good morning, Mariana.
Good morning. We have a situation from one of Mariana's favorite clients as a director. The bidding went one no trump, pass, two hearts, which wasn't alerted, although they did play transfers. Pass back to the one no trump person who bid three hearts. Pass back to the person who bid two hearts, and they now bid four spades. Pass, 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 ending the auction.
Okay, well,
Asked what
so
was going
the person
on.
who won the trump
Yeah.
obviously had forgotten about what they were playing. Also, sounds like a not very strong player because the alternative would be two hearts would be sign off, and he's raised that to three. That was lucky for his partner. So, the first thing you do is you say, let's finish the hand, play the hand out, and then call me back at the end of the hand. and I come back. And first of all, if four spades has gone several off, I'm sure that the opponents aren't going to be unhappy at all and probably will be leaving the score standing. The second thing is his partner can guess what's happened from three hearts, but not supposed to be guessing about what's happened from the failure to alert. So you'd be asking their pun, if it had been correctly alerted as a transfer, what would three hearts have been? People play sort of super accepts of some sort. Sounds like this pair might not have. Whatever it is, if they say no agreement, then no agreement. And I'll have to consider if they can figure out that their partner's forgotten to transfer or has super accepted. So sounds like their four spade bid would be correct either way. So it sounds like the contract would be played in four spades and the result would be whatever they achieved. Now, it's slightly possible that maybe the person who bid four spades in some way conveyed to their partner that they were grumpy and that this was the suit they really had. And that was the reason that the one no trump opener managed to pass the four spades. So you'd be asking the opponents, when they bid four spades, was there any expression at the table that helped their partner guess to pass four spades? If they say no, there wasn't, then you'd be leaving it. If there was, then you'd have to deal with that. So not a terribly difficult situation. There can be sort of far more tricky scenarios involving forgetting system than this one. For instance, you know how it goes when you overcall one no trump with two diamonds and you've forgotten that you're playing two diamonds for the majors. That can be much trickier situation when partner alerts it and bids a major and you bid three diamonds and say, no, I've really got diamonds. That could be a trickier situation than the one you've given me, because there was never really any chance that the person who transferred to spades was ever going to pass three hearts, were they?
Could you ask them why they didn't bid three spades?
Well, they were going to bid three or four spades. You could ask them why they didn't bid three spades. For instance, if you were ethically treating it as a super accept, let's say you had game points and spades, what else would you do over a three hearts super
I
accept
see.
other than bid four spades?
Would you consider winding it back to three hearts?
So what's your rationale in winding it back to three hearts? You're saying that the person who transferred is going to not know what the three hearts is. If you're working it out rationally and you're going to explain it to them, how are you going to explain it to them, Mariana, that you're winding it back to three hearts?
I
What
see
are the
what you mean.
reasons you're going to give them?
What I actually did is I asked them to play the hand and
That's
then
correct.
call me back if they felt that they were disadvantaged. That's what I said. And
They can be disadvantaged, but it could be just down to luck. For instance, let's say this four spade makes one trick more than most people in the room, but that's because it's lucky that the person on lead at this table leads something unlucky compared to what it would be if the no trump opener had bid spades. It could be lucky for the people who committed the infraction, couldn't it? It could also be unlucky for them if they got a worse lead from the other side there. That's certainly possible. But just because someone's been lucky or unlucky after that infraction doesn't mean that's the reason you adjust it. You adjust it if they've gained an advantage bidding to a contract that they wouldn't have otherwise bid to, or they've saved themselves from a misunderstanding. So this particular one, they're never going to play in hearts because the person who's transferred is always going to put it back to spades, right? Because they can guess from that one. But the example I was trying to give you, where it's gone one no trump and a two diamond overcall, which is alerted for majors, but they've actually got diamonds, that situation could be fraught with problems, right? Particularly when the person who's overcalled diamonds has been reminded about their system. So if they've got a three card major, when partner bids that major, they should support it. They've gained information from the alert that they've then taken advantage of when they wouldn't have otherwise known. So, like if there'd been a screen across the table, they wouldn't have been reminded about their system. The example here where there's been a transfer and part of didn't accept the transfer, even if there'd been a screen across the table, you'd sort of know what had gone wrong. Yeah, there would be two explanations. One, partner's forgotten, or two, partner has super accepted and has got good spade support and is showing me doubles and hearts or whatever method you play. Although I'm guessing from the fact that they forgot they were playing transfers, I'm guessing that the word super accept probably wasn't something that was understood.
No.
I reckon most of the people in that room would not know what a super accept was. It did occur to me that it might get a bit more complicated if the person that transferred to spades was actually 5-5 in the majors. That could get a bit awkward. Oh, they'd five spades and five
Well,
hearts.
yes, I guess. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. I guess there could be something in this. That's the thing when you're directing, different situations come up all the time. You'd have to say this probably not going to be an issue, but anyway.
Okay. Thank you for
Thanks, Beth.
that.
Yep.
Okay.
Bye.
He's really awesome.
Here's a treat for you, listeners. Gavin Wolpert talking with Peter Hollins about board one in the Soloway tournament of the final. Don't get too drawn into what the hands look like. Here's how top players can make a mistake and how they get it in their head to correct it on board two.
And that one passed, and Raj jumped to four hearts. I knew he probably only had three hearts because he didn't just raise me, right? He could have raised two hearts to three hearts or two hearts to four hearts. But what I didn't know was that he had such good diamonds, that he had four card diamond support. So when I was thinking about what to do over four hearts, I really wasn't sure whether I was supposed to leave him in four hearts or pull back to five diamonds. But I was really worried that he didn't have as much. He power doubled, right? So he could have had more clubs. He didn't have to have four diamonds in this option. I think he could have even had like two diamonds and three clubs. So I wasn't really sure about what was going on. And so I decided to just pass four hearts. When they led a spade, and dummy came down, and I was obviously not happy with being in a game with Jack third up to Queen fourth. And my first thought is, was five diamonds better? And I realized pretty quickly that, well, five diamonds, it's got a lot of work to do. I would have to rough three of my clubs in the dummy. And also I have to solve this heart suit. So I'm like, okay, whatever. Let me try and hack four hearts in my 4-3 fit. And I'm counting my tricks, and I have the ace of clubs, and I have now the queen and ace of spades is three. If I can get two diamonds is five. So all I really need is five trump tricks. And so I can rough spade with the two. I can rough a club with the three of hearts. I can rough a spade with the five of hearts. I can rough a club with the six of hearts. That's four. But I won't be able to rough a fifth spade. So I'm going to need to rough a fourth club into dummy. That's going to have to be my 10th trick. So I started going about my business. And my first thought is, should I just cash two diamonds right now and get it over with? And or no, I can do it later. I said to myself, no, I'll cash two diamonds later. So I won the queen of spades, and I don't remember if I cashed the ace or if I played a low spade and roughed it.
Yeah, like importantly, I like that you pitched diamond here. It'd be very easy to go, hey, well, I want to like run my diamonds. That's like a pipe dream.
Yeah, there was just no chance I was going to be able to draw trumps and enjoy the diamonds. It was just not going to happen. So all I have to do now to make this hand is play ace of diamonds, diamond of the king, and lead a club towards the dummy. But I called a diamond from the dummy. I called low. I said, play a diamond. And like my heart sank because now I was in the wrong hand. I needed to cash the diamond. I knew immediately, like I said the word diamond and suddenly I knew like, what have you done? And so now I won the king of diamonds. But now when I played a club, Self was able to pitch a diamond and I got my rough and dummy, but now I didn't get my second diamond trick. So I just went down in a completely cold game. It's the first board of Solway and I've just gone down. You know, you're so excited. You're like, how often do you get to the finals? The first board. And you see 10 tricks, you're about to take them, and then you call the wrong card from dummy and go down in a cold game on the first board. I was like, I was shaking. I'm not going to lie. I was shaking. Like, it's nerve-wracking. I had a moment where I said to myself, all right, listen, you pride yourself in being able to get over bad boards. If there's ever a time where for you to just dig in and play better and just it's over, just get it out of your mind and get on to the next hand. Prove it, you know, prove that you are good at getting over bad boards now. All right, so that's the start of my match, okay, is going down in this game. So the next board two.
What are your strategies for getting over bad boards? Like, it's easy to say do it, but like, what sort of things do you try and do?
I just focus, like, just like look at the next hand and just get into it. I've had a lot of experience with it in my life, getting over bad. I've had a lot of bad boards.
Yeah.
That's the key to getting over bad boards, is I have a few of them. That's been my life. I mean, I've played a lot of my life with clients, so I've had to, maybe it's not always my bad boards, but mentally, it's just as difficult to get over your partner's bad boards as it is your own. Maybe not just as difficult. It's definitely, so I've just had a lot of practice at it, and I just kind of, and success with it. I feel like I've had that mentality of, I don't know, maybe I pretended at first that I was good at getting over bad boards, but at some point I started to believe it. That, hey, you don't let stuff get to you, so you're good. This is the finals, and I'm telling you, it was definitely shaken a little bit. But anyway, so the next board, I'm like, okay, I get to open a no trip on the next board. I'm like, here's your chance at redemption, right? Board two.
How cool was that? Well, that's about it for this week. We are going to sign off with the tip from Barry.
Don't you love it when the opponent's bid to seven or something? Doesn't that just
float
your boat? I mean, so the bid to seven of a suit, what can you do? The only thing I can suggest is that, in general, you're not trying to take a trick on the opening lead, because you're probably not going to. You're just trying not to give away anything. So against seven of a suit, the standard lead, if there is such a thing, is a trump. I'd still be reluctant to lead a singleton trump, to be honest. If you've got two or three trumps, you know, the chances are they're going to have ace, king, queen of trumps. If they're in seven spades, they're not going to be there without the top three honours. Leading trump is the safest lead. But on the other hand, I always remember Stephen Burgess telling his partners, the late Stephen Burgess, I should say, don't lead a trump. I can't rough it.
Funny. But
there you go. If you're looking for a nice safe lead against seven of a suit, try a trump.
How many times would that happen? Maybe twice. I know this year we're what, fourth weekend, are we? And we've already bid to a Grand Slam in Thames, and many people would have done that. So that's one tick off your bingo card list of things to do in bridge.
We've only had 3 weeks, two Grand Slams. If we carry on at that rate, we're going to have 40-something by the time we get to the end of the year.
Yeah,
we'll be back with the results from Canberra and from Tauranga.
And FYI, we mentioned a bridge bingo card. I'll see if I can post one up for you to have a look at. Might be a bit of fun. Let me know how you get on. bridgezoneshuffle@gmail.com. Have a good week, and we'll see you at the tables.
Bye for now.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring bridge from beginner to international nationwide. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.